Hey, y'all.
This is Talkin' Trash with Liv
and Lizzie,
the podcast where two friends show each other our silliest and most treasured movies.
Each week, we'll watch a beloved movie,
no matter how corny, childish, or contrived.
Sometimes a masterpiece with minor flaws.
Other times, a magnificent mess.
Because one man's trash
is Liv and Lizzie's treasure.
Lot number 31. A different musical than what we had anticipated.
Dun 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 dun
dun dun boom.
Dun 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 dun.
Yeah, don't you cut out on that timpani.
Sorry.
don't you short circuit the timpani.
I'm gonna get like a cease and desist letter from Andrew Lloyd Webber or something.
Okay, so in case you have not been able to figure out, while we said last time that we were going to be watching Mamma Mia, our dear friend Kelsey, who was going to be our guest for it, could not make it this week. So we are going to instead watch...
Phantom of the Opera!
2004!
Welcome to Talking Trash, where we are absolute liars. Plot but twist.
At least this time we're watching trash.
That's true. Plot twist. The trash was us all along.
The real trash was the friends we made along the way. It's very, very true.
But yeah, so we're watching Phantom 2004. I was like 2004? How does that even work? Yeah. 2004. But before we get into that,
yes.
How have you been, Lizzie?
I have been great.
Sorry.
I just got back from a lovely trip to California to visit a friend for her birthday. Had not been out there before, and now I have set foot in the Pacific. And actually went with Kelsey, and we had a fabulous time. I am doing very well. I'm glad that you're doing better.
Yes. So it's my fault that we couldn't record Mamma Mia the day we were meant to record it. So our friend Kelsey lives out of town. Mm-hmm. So the day we were meant to record with her, I woke up and I was like, oh, I'm not okay. I was like deathly ill, to the point where I was like, oh my God, I have COVID. So I was like really, really stressed. So then I went and got a COVID test, and I did not have COVID, nor did I have strep. Basically, I survived an entire pandemic just to come out the other side and be laid low for like a week and a half by a head cold. So yeah, it was just a really bad virus. Got a steroid shot in my butt, and they sent me home humiliated and very tired and very sick. So
yep.
That was my week. I'm still kind of congested. I'm still not 100%.
But you sent me snaps like the first days you were sick, and your voice was at least like two or three octaves lower than this.
Yeah, like there was one night where I didn't have a voice. Like I went to say something to Kyle and like nothing came out. And I was like, I don't even know how to communicate anything effectively right now. And I was so sick at one point that Zoe, my little dog, she was like following me everywhere, and she would sit at my feet no matter what I was doing, because she was like, oh no, mommy's dying. Like,
the pack is wounded.
The pack. So yeah, that was definitely not fun. But I am back on my feet now. I'm better. Just had my 3-year anniversary with Kyle. So
happy anniversary.
Fun. Thank you. Other than that, though, life is just kind of trucking on. Mm-hmm. Not much else is happening.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Well, what is the vibe this evening?
Surprise, it's red wine.
Yep.
9 out of 10 times, we're like, what excuse can we make to drink red wine with this movie?
When people are like, how'd you start a podcast? Well, Liv and I were looking for whatever excuse we had. This is a Merlot called Deeply Rooted. It is a California wine, but it has a cool spider web on the front. So kind of matches the baby gothic that is this movie.
This is like gothic light.
This was intro to gothic for me. So I have distinct memories of renting this from Blockbuster with my friends. Baby Lizzie was a complete panty waste who thought that any PG-13 movie was going to be terrifying, and I thought his face was going to be horribly mangled, which we'll get to that later. But I was anticipating this scaring me, and I remember like shaking in my boots when I was watching it, and then I realized, wait, no. I will say, thankfully, this was not my introduction to it. I had listened to the Broadway cast recording beforehand, and I loved the musical. I still love this musical. However, this was my introduction to watching it. Mm-hmm. So, middle school Lizzie actually loved this movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was your experience. So
middle school Liv saw this in theaters. Mm-hmm. My mom took me to see it. I had no idea what it was going to be about, but my mom wanted to go see it. She was like, let's go, and I just was like, I'm down because I love movies. So I didn't really care. I was like, worst case scenario, it's a bad movie and I get to sit in like a cold dark theater and eat some popcorn. Down. Mm-hmm. Dope. I walked out of this movie obsessed.
Yeah. I feel like this probably awakened something in both you and I.
For Christmas that year, I got a snow globe that played Think of Me and had Christine Daae in it. Mm-hmm. I got like 3 Phantom of the Opera themed like Christmas ornaments. For my birthday that year, all my friends knew I was obsessed with it, so I opened my locker. And my friend Mandy had bought me a red rose and tied a black ribbon around it.
Nice.
And left it in my locker because I went to a small private Christian school and we weren't allowed to have locks on our lockers because we had a, quote, community of trust because stealing is sin. And, it was like, you know, Lord Jesus will send you to hell if you sin. So don't take things out of your friend's lockers.
Hmm.
So she literally just opened my locker and like filled it with stuff for my birthday. It was great. It was great for your birthday because you knew you were gonna open your locker and find something fun.
Not going on a deep tangent here, but I love finding out all the ways that you and I were raised differently.
Yeah.
Like in some ways the exact same beliefs and in some ways totally differently.
It's funny
like I was raised like trust Jesus but wear a seatbelt and lock your locker.
Mm-hmm. it's funny because like my folks were very chill, arguably way chiller than yours. Mm-hmm. Were like they let me watch my first PG-13 movie was Lord of the Rings in the theater 2001. So I was not yet 10 years old. I was 9. That was my first PG-13.
To be fair, my parents offered to take me to see Lord of the Rings.
Right, you just
I was. We were talking earlier. I was a total panty. The first PG-13 movie I saw was Pirates of the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. At home. I had been scared to see it in theaters because it had skeletons in it. Mm-hmm. And I got deathly ill one morning and my mom had rented it. And she'd watched it twice the weekend before. It was a Monday I was sick. And Monday morning she's like, you want to watch Pirates of the Caribbean? And now I can recite the movie from start to finish.
Yeah. My folks weren't ever, like, they weren't strict about what I watched. Mm-hmm. They weren't like, they were very much like, trust Jesus but wear a seatbelt. Mm-hmm. You know? My school was a little more...
Right.
You know, my first day at school, they had a guest speaker who sang this song about, I don't remember the Bible verse, but it was from Revelation, and it was like, liars go to hell, liars go to hell,
okay,
burn. That was my introduction.
Revelation 21:8.
Yeah, that's it!
21:8. That was sung as a joke. And, like, I heard that for the first time when I was in middle school, and it was always a joke. And the kids would get in trouble. There's a private school associated with the church that I go to, and they would get into tons of trouble if they were caught singing that in school. So that amuses me.
Oh, yeah. They had a guest speaker come in, and she sang that song. And then later in the day, they ended up having, like an immediate emergency assembly, and they were like, listen, that's not how theology works. They were like, we're really sorry, we didn't know if she was gonna say that. It was like my first day, and I was like, oh my god,
that's kind of amazing.
It was they did a hard 180. They were like, no, that's not what we teach here.
That's like the opposite of the John Mulaney, the follow-up assembly, because you had behaved so badly at the assembly.
Oh no, we had a ton of those. But yeah, anyways,
back from the tangent that I said back from the tangent. Long tangent.
So I've always loved gothic stuff, and
by the way, live through a wonderful D&D vampire one shot
for
us as friends, that was masterfully spooky gothic wonderfulness. Continue.
Oh, thanks. So yeah, I would actually argue that when we're watching this movie, we'll talk about it more afterwards, but Gothic literature, this particular brand of like Victorian Gothic, is my favorite. And having seen the stage play, because I saw this movie and I was obsessed. So my dad and my mom got me tickets to the stage play when it came to the Fox Theater in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. We went, it was great. I like sobbed through the whole thing. I remember loving this movie and then seeing the musical and then being a little disappointed with the movie.
Yes.
Because to me, this film actually dumbs down some of the best gothic elements.
I'd agree.
So, I have a love-hate relationship with this movie, but it will always be a treasure to me, because without it, I never would have gotten into Phantom of the Opera, and arguably, I wouldn't have gotten into musical theater.
Yeah. This was... I'm kind of... I consider myself a fan of Broadway light. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I've seen the big ones. When I was in high school, my mom took me to the Fox to see this for my birthday. Mm-hmm. We both adored this. Mm-hmm. So this was something that we kind of bonded over.
Yeah, same.
And then when I was in college, I watched the recording with Ramin Kamirlou.
I'm so in love
forever.
With him.
Absolutely. All three main leads in that are just perfection.
Perfect. Perfect cast.
However, my favorite performance of The Phantom that I've seen was on the West End. We went and saw it. Kelsey actually came with me and saw it.
Okay.
The Phantom there had very clearly, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast or not, I have a brother who is on the spectrum, and there are certain mannerisms that he has, just movements and body language, that I remember when I went and saw the performance on the West End, he brought those kind of things into the performance, and it was something I'd never seen before. And suddenly, that sort of rewrote the story in my brain, because I had grown up with it as, he is this dashing, debonair, misunderstood figure that I think can be, that can be the performance and can be done very well. Mm-hmm. But once I'd seen that, it changes the way I watch this one, where they worked so hard to try and keep Gerard Butler hot.
Yes.
That they missed the true meaning.
Golden opportunity.
I may be diving into stuff that we'll probably dive into more detail with it later, but that's my favorite version of it, my favorite Phantom I've seen. My favorite version is still Sarah Bareilles and Ramin Kamirlou.
Sarah Bogus? Bogus?
Sierra Bogus.
Sierra.
I said Sarah Bareilles.
You did say Sarah Bareilles.
Wow.
Love her too, but not as Christine.
That would be a very different vibe.
Very different Christine. okay, so if you've never seen this film, first of all, shame on you. Go watch it immediately. But second of all, brief overview of the plot. Mm-hmm. So The Phantom of the Opera follows Christine Daae, a ballerina at the Parisian Opera House who has been taking voice lessons in secret from an angel of music who she believes was sent by her dead father. Plot twist, it's not an angel, it is a human man who...
is a basement dweller.
Lives in the basement and terrorizes the opera house.
Yes.
He's kind of a murderous psychopath, and
but we love him.
We love him. So, but then her childhood friend Raul shows up, and she and Raul have this, like, budding romance.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this very tense love triangle between Christine the Phantom and Raul.
Yep.
Murder and mayhem ensue, and lots of great singing.
Wonderful songs.
Amazing songs.
Oh, I don't think we've said this. This film came out in 2004.
Yes.
It's approaching 20 years old, which makes me feel insanely old.
It's old.
And directed by Joel Schumacher.
Okay, real quick, Joel Schumacher. What the hell, dude? Like, what is this? Joel Schumacher directed things like The Lost Boys.
Yeah.
He did all the crappy Batmans, like the ones after Tim Burton quit.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
Clooney Batman.
Most of his movies are action-adventure flicks.
I can't remember, was it George Clooney who apologized for Batman and Robin, or was it Joel Schumacher who apologized for Batman and Robin?
I don't know.
I think it was George Clooney.
He
publicly apologized.
I couldn't make it through the whole movie. I was like, this is terrible, and I turned it off.
I have watched the whole movie. It's one that I will inevitably show to you on here, because in my opinion, it's one of those so bad it's good.
See, I love the very first Michael Keaton Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Burton. Great. So it was so sad seeing the degradation of it over the years as it just got worse.
Before we continue too far down the Batman train, question. Have you seen the very first Batman movie, Batman the movie, with...
Adam West. Yes, I have.
Okay, good.
I have.
Good. I was going to show it to you on this channel if you had not.
We used to watch, my friend Marisa and I used to watch the old, like, Batman show,
because
we just loved it in high school. But yeah, so, but back to Joel Schumacher. So, there are two, like, weird anomalies, just movies that don't make sense in his repertoire. One of them is Phantom of the Opera, and the other one is The Wiz.
Which I have not seen.
I don't know how to say it. Like, I feel like this man has no business doing musical theater.
No.
But here he is. But you know what? He does it better than Tom Hooper. I will give him that. He does it better than Tom Hooper. I would rather watch this than rewatch Les Mis. I'd rather watch this. Okay, hot take. I like Cats, but for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
I like it because it's bad.
Yeah.
I'm going to make you watch it on here at some point.
It's the same reason I like Batman and Robin. I like it because it's bad.
We'll have a so bad it's good month.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Phantom of the Opera is this weird anomaly for Joel Schumacher. Now let's talk about its stats a little bit.
I am very curious.
While I pull this up, it stars Gerard Butler.
We'll talk about him as a choice later.
Emmy Rossum, I think is her name. I could not tell you anything else she's been in. Miranda Richardson is such a good actress. She plays Madame Giry.
Yes.
Minnie Driver, we're going to talk a lot about her. She absolutely steals the show.
I was about to say.
As Carlotta.
Minnie Driver, a.k.a. the best part of this.
Yes. Simon Callow. Ciarán Hinds? Is that? Am I saying his name right?
I have no idea.
It's a very Irish name, and I don't always know how to pronounce them. My personal favorite other person in this film, though, is actually Patrick Wilson.
Oh, yes.
Okay. I don't like Raul in almost any version I've seen.
Well, so here's the thing. Growing up, I thought you were supposed to like Raul because of this movie. So imagine my surprise when I'm seeing the stage musical and I'm like, oh.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you're kind of supposed to like Raul.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to have a complicated relationship with it. But then, of course, Andrew Lloyd Webber was like, he identifies with the Phantom and thinks he is Phantom. And he's like butthurt that people debate whether or not Phantom is a good guy or not. So we had to write a sequel where Christine and Phantom end up together, which is dumb. But it gave us two of the best musical theater songs, in my opinion, ever. So I forgive it. for those two numbers, but it's a terrible show. It's horrible. Yeah. I saw it live in the West End. I saw it with the original cast, and even their expertise could not save the horrible story. For me, I love Patrick Wilson. If you don't immediately know who Patrick Wilson is, so I'm a big horror fan. I love the Conjuring universe. Love it. Now, the people it's based on, I'm suddenly blanking on their name. Ed and Lorraine Warren. Terrible human beings.
You're looking at me like you would expect me to know this. Okay, like, I'm never going to watch a Conjuring movie.
So, all you need to know is this. Ed and Lorraine Warren, we were not a part of the Catholic Church. I mean, they were Catholic themselves. They were not a part of the, like, hierarchy. They were, but they were, like, adjacent. They somehow, like, wormed their way in, and they were basically the only non-priests who were blessed by the Pope to perform exorcisms. Now, here's the problem. There is incredibly solid evidence that they went into homes of families in distress who were suffering from things like mental illness and very clearly not demon-possessed and then, like, manipulated them and ended up using that to make a ton of money. They're horrible people. But the Conjuring universe does a good job of letting you, like, suspend your disbelief and pretend it's all real. And he, as Ed Warren, is wonderful. And I just think he's a good actor. Anyways, that was my rant about Raul. I really like him. And I really dislike the Warrens. But we probably aren't ever going to get more in-depth than that on this show. So the overall rating of this film is, why am I on IMDb?
I was about to say, that is not Rotten Tomatoes.
No, it's not. Where's Rotten Tomatoes?
I do really want to see the comparison of fans to critics, because, and I'm curious how much it's changed over the years. Please do tell.
Okay, so the fan reception is 84% positive.
Okay.
The critic reception is 33% negative.
That doesn't surprise me too much.
No, not at all. It's not good.
Just because, like I said, like, when this was the only version of it that I had, I loved it.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, saw the stage musical and went, okay, so, you know, if you gotta pick your corny, like, Phantom of the Opera is corny, but this is corny. I hate when something corny tries to take itself seriously. Like, yes. this just deserves a full-blown, you know, crazy adaptation.
Are you ready for my favorite film critic response?
Yes.
This is Richard Probst from The Independent Critic. He says, "As I was sitting in the auditorium alone watching this film, I kept looking around hoping there was a chandelier above me getting ready to plummet to the ground."
Fitting.
Shout out to Richard Probst for a great response to this
Absolutely
film.
Absolutely fitting.
So yeah, if you watch it, it's so much fun, but it's objectively a bad movie.
Yes.
But
I watch this with my girlfriends all the time.
All the time. All the time. It's one that, like, as soon as I find out someone hasn't seen it, I'm like, oh, you've never seen this movie?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, we have to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, one of the first things I did with my husband when we were started dating, it was like, wait, he had never seen, this was on the list, and he'd never seen Princess Bride. So I was like, oh my God.
Oh.
So.
A bad movie and a perfect film.
So yeah, we watched both of them within fairly quick succession.
Good.
But yeah, he was definitely not as impressed with this one. He was like, it's okay.
Yeah. So. I will save my
We'll talk about why it's bad afterwards.
Yeah. I keep looking, so we're sitting on Prime right now. I know this was somewhere to stream for a while, and I'm disappointed that apparently it's been ticking off the other stream sites.
Yeah.
But we're looking at, like, the image that comes up on Prime before you rent it, and I will say this, Emmy Rossum's 2004 makeup is
so
fabulous.
Good. So good.
And it's very 2004. She's got the full pink gloss lips, but then, like, a smoky, deep purple gray eye. And
her eyebrows are not atrociously thin,
yeah,
but they're thin and very manicured.
They're very curvy. Very 2004 curvy.
Yep.
So, I think that's it for me. I think I'm ready to relive this, especially with you.
Reached the point of no return.
We have. This is the point of no return.
It sounds just like that.
I'll talk about Gerard Butler later. It'll be great.
All right, let's do this, fam.
Fam or fan? There's no way I can make a
phantom. That's terrible.
Yeah,
I'm not.
I was gonna.
Okay.
Okay, I know we normally start with pluses and or pros and cons, whatever. I'm not. I'm starting with the most pressing thought that I have at the very end of that movie that I forgot. The final shot before they pan back and do their Moulin Rouge framing narrative within a framing narrative of the postcard and the candle, all that baloney. They zoom in on the rose that the now like 120-year-old Phantom has left for Christine, and it's all sepia toned, but then the rose turns red, and
the rose, nothing else.
I just turned to Liv and said, they did not earn the right to Schindler's List that. Not in the slightest.
Not at all.
How dare they? If they wanted to pan back and like maybe the whole photograph was in color, that would have been weird, seeing as we zoomed in on a photograph in sepia tone for no reason except that Moulin Rouge had come out a few years prior to this.
Yeah, that's literally it.
And we
it.
Had to make it
that's
like
literally
Moulin
it.
Rouge. Literally all of these things, it's like, why are we doing this? Well, Moulin Rouge did this.
This movie was exhausting.
Yeah.
But I loved it.
Oh,
I love making fun of it with you.
I enjoyed every second of watching this with you.
I just liked it more than I remembered, but I enjoyed it more than I remembered, too.
Yes.
Because I liked making fun of it with you.
Yes.
But it's not good.
No, it's not. It's not a good movie. There are good things about it, and like many bad movies, it makes for some very pretty GIF sets online.
Yes, the aesthetic, the hashtag aesthetic.
Hashtag aesthetic. But yeah, it's not good.
No.
But I think with that in mind, let's start with the things that did work.
Let's do this. Let's start with what worked and then what didn't work. But then at the end, I think we need to have a discussion about the love triangle, who we would choose to end up with.
We should discuss
in
this
version versus the stage version and why.
This is an important conversation, and I quite agree.
First, what worked?
Okay. We said at the beginning, we joked that, like, when I said, there are some things in this that I like, and you were like, is it the costumes and Minnie Driver?
Yeah,
and I was
that's
like,
it. That's it.
Pretty much, yeah. But I will say, it's weird because there's like two or three just gorgeous shots in this movie, and then the rest of it is shot so strangely.
Yeah.
But the two or three gorgeous shots are just really, really
there
beautiful.
Are moments where the shot composition is just excellent.
Yes.
Where the color is excellent.
Uh-huh.
We'll talk about some of the issues I had with color and lighting later, because they were there. But there are moments where the color is just vivid and beautiful and intentional, and I really enjoy it.
Yeah. When the movie's not afraid to do color, it's honestly my favorite parts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love the performance of Il Muto, because you've got these really vibrant, beautiful colors.
It's great.
And you...
the pastorals and kind of this idea of pastorals representing innocence in a way and kind of, you know, like that being juxtaposed with the murder and the darkness behind the scenes. You know, you've got like, I mean, on stage there's this lighthearted version that's like the intricacy of relationships, which is a major theme throughout. I mean, that whole part works well with how they've lit it, how they've styled it, the costumes, all of it.
Yeah. I will also say, you know, this is a, like, I think many Broadway shows, you can't translate this to film and duplicate or replicate the experience, because there's something about watching a performance about a theater in a theater.
Yes.
And watching a performance about an opera in an opera house. Mm-hmm. But one of my favorite things in the stage musical, I said this to you, I love in the opening when they usher out this giant, you know, stage elephant, but then they cut and they turn it around and you see there's two prop guys back there drinking. And in this movie, they realized, well, we can have other shots of the theater that you can't have mm-hmm. when you're doing the musical, and that included backstage things.
Yes,
and
so I love all of that part.
Every shot of the performers backstage, the guy who moons Carlotta, I actually really like the composer in this.
Me
every
too.
Time you see what's going on with the composer and how his life just is impossibly difficult, I feel for him, and it's very comical.
Yeah, and I like too, because the stage musical sets him up. You know, you have that like if my diva commands mm-hmm. part when he's addressing Carlotta, and so we get this impression that he's kind of beholden to the whims of like all these other people, and he should be in charge, but he's not.
Mm-hmm.
Which, so building on that in the film worked really well, I think.
Which I will also say, and this doesn't translate as well in the film, if they had really leaned into the idea of the Phantom as this misunderstood musical genius, mm-hmm. that would have been really cool, to kind of have this, you know, the composer who is beholden to everyone else's whims and is misunderstood, contrasted with, you know, mm-hmm. the Phantom. I think they try to do that by showing, you know, when Don Juan Triumphant is being performed and you see the audience being like, oh my, but that doesn't really work. Especially one of the things I like in the musical is that like they're in the middle of rehearsals and they're like, what do we do with this?
But one of the things that I enjoy about the rehearsal scene is that they're all offbeat.
Yeah.
And the composer, or not the composer, sorry, the conductor mm-hmm. is telling them that they're doing it wrong, mm-hmm. but he's having trouble communicating it. But you get the sense that like as a fellow master musician that he understands.
Yeah.
He just doesn't, it's beyond him.
Yes.
And so then of course that's when the magical like piano that plays itself comes in.
I will say, things that are cut that I don't mind being cut, the magical piano that plays itself is...
I like that scene, but I get that it wouldn't have worked in a movie as well. But one of the things I love about that scene, though, is that it kind of shows you... Here's the thing about Phantom in the stage play. He's not just an amazing musician.
Mm-hmm.
He's an incredible music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see in that scene is that his passion and drive and intensity with playing the music mm-hmm. actually makes the singers understand. When mm-hmm. he starts magically playing the piano, that's when they get it.
Yeah. I remember saying this now. When we were talking about the scene with the letters, which in the musical is played for comedy. It's mm-hmm. in their office and people are walking around flustered. And here they were like, well, we've got this big, beautiful set. Let's just have them walk around, you know, the front of the opera house and sing this. But one of the things in the letters that they get in the stage play is very specific about, like, you know, the chorus was enchanting, but the dancing was a lamentable mess.
Mm.
And he talks about, like, a specific oboe player who needs to be fired. Like, he's so attentive to the full performance.
It doesn't feel like he cares about the opera house.
Because in this one, the opera house burns down.
He
burns it down, and when he writes to them, he's just saying, and I don't like Carlotta. And we're like, we get it, dude.
Yeah. Like, you want your girlfriend to have the lead, but, like, there's even lyrics cut, I think, from the musical that, like, he goes into detail about, like, his issues with Carlotta.
Yes.
You know? So we know it's not just, like, oh, she's a diva. Mm-hmm. It's, like, she, like, is overbearing and mm-hmm. she's singing it wrong and mm-hmm. it needs to be done like this, you know? His criticisms are about musical integrity mm-hmm. in the production.
Yeah.
The stage production. So, yeah, I think there's a lot lost in this version. I think they added some good things, but I think they cut some really strong things.
Yeah. One thing that I will say was an improvement, that they had to move stuff around for the movie, mm-hmm. which worked and made sense. It's nice that they're able to save the chandelier drop for the end. And
I think that was the right call for the film.
Yeah. And that, like, he escapes with Christine right before the chandelier drops by grabbing her and jumping into the open hole in the stage, and it looks like they're falling into hell. And then the chandelier drops and the drama is peak. I also like that they moved... I mixed something up. I was going to say something I liked that they moved... but I actually wasn't a fan. I'm actually gonna retract that. I was gonna say I didn't like that they moved Twisted Every Way to after Wishing You Were Somehow Here Again. But actually, with this movie, it makes sense for what they were doing.
It makes
with
sense. One of the characters. I don't love it. But I'll hold off on that for a later time.
Tell me about things that you liked.
So, we already kind of touched on this. Minnie Driver, she doesn't sing the part of Carlotta, but she acts her phenomenally. Mm-hmm. She's so funny. She's so likable. I think whoever designed the costumes deserves a big kiss and a salary raise. Because they're beautiful. They're absolutely stunning. And sometimes the continuity of the costumes doesn't always make sense to me. I don't get why they're wearing certain things at certain times. Mm-hmm. But I don't always care because they're just so darn pretty. Mm-hmm. I think whoever designed the sets did an impeccable job. They're beautiful.
I have a love-hate relationship with the sets, and I think it doesn't have to do so much with the set construction as
it's how they're used.
Well, it's also the lighting, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, but the sets themselves, at face value, are beautiful.
Yes.
One thing that I like, in the stage production during Wishing You Were Somehow Here, the set itself always feels incredibly underwhelming.
It's flat.
It's very flat. And so, even though I don't like how they blocked the scene where she's singing Wishing You Were Somehow Here Again, mm-hmm. I don't like the direction. I love that they give her this beautiful... romantic era, like gothic cemetery to explore.
Yeah.
I love that element of it.
I also always felt that when they're on, the rooftop singing All I Ask of You in the stage musical, mm-hmm. until the Phantom reveal, I don't think that's a very interesting set. And here they actually kind of paralleled that scene with the cemetery. You've got these, like, looming mm-hmm. statues kind of looking down on them, which would be great, again, if the Phantom were hidden better, but we'll get into that later. Mm-hmm. And you have the snow on the... But you have the snow on the ground. You have the big looming statues. I liked that one, too. A lot of moments in this, they used the medium of film to try and give things dimension. We were saying how you can already tell that the camera quality has improved so much in the past 17 years.
Yes.
So there's some shots that aren't as clear or shots that look cluttered that mm-hmm. if they were being shot today, I think would have been...
Looked even better.
Spectacular.
Yeah. One other thing I liked is, and I already kind of mentioned this, but Patrick Wilson's performance as Raoul.
He's so sweet.
He's very sweet. This is the only version where Raoul comes across as a himbo who drank his respect women juice instead of a condescending prick.
Yeah.
Every other version, Raoul is a horrible person and I can't stand him.
Yeah.
This is the only version where I might leave with Raoul. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end when he says, I fought so hard to free you,
mm-hmm.
it's so innocent. And I believe him. I believe that his entire purpose is to help Christine and to give her the best life possible.
Yep.
And that's something that I'm going to use that to segue into what, if that's okay. Do you have anything else that you like that you want to talk about?
I think that's my main positive.
So. Cool. So I'm going to use that to segue into what I don't like, because the thing that I struggle with in this production is this is not truly a romance.
I agree.
This is Daddy Issues the musical. And yes. So, when played correctly, I think Raul should not be a good person. He should be a complex person. He's not good, he's not bad. Same for the Phantom. When played correctly, I think you should walk away debating and unsure who she would leave with. In this version, I can't in good conscience say that she should have stayed with Phantom.
Yeah, I agree.
Raul's cute. He loves her. Even the moments when he's saying things like, there is no Phantom of the Opera. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel, like, in the musical, like, the stage production, it feels like he's gaslighting her.
Yeah.
But in this one, it feels more like he's trying to talk her off of a ledge. Mm-hmm. Like, it's okay, like, don't be scared of this ghost that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And then later when he realizes he does exist, he's like, oh, crap, I've got to help her.
Yeah.
You know, so the way that
he sleeps outside her room.
Yeah, he is so intent on keeping her safe. Whereas in the musical proper, Raul is ready to feed her to the wolves.
Yes.
And they cut that out in this version. And so in this version, when you have this Raul that's so intent upon protecting Christine, keeping her safe, who is reminding her that, because, you know, one of the ways that the Phantom gets to Christine is by pretending to be the ghost of her dead father.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's the one who's like, that thing is not your father.
Yeah.
And in a sense, he's repeatedly trying to free her throughout the movie, both physically and emotionally from Phantom. He's not your father. You don't owe him anything. Mm-hmm. You deserve to be free.
Yes.
So he's a good guy.
Yes.
He's an actual drink his respect women juice kind of guy.
Yes.
Playing Raul, you get the sense that he thinks he is smarter, he's wiser, that he believes himself to be better than Christine in every way, shape, and form.
He's her protector and...
So he ends up being a very different kind of father figure to Phantom's father figure. And so... You know, and then if you get past this, like, kind of Freudian daddy issue stuff, when you look at them as lovers, Raul is the safe choice for the time period.
Mm-hmm.
He is the protector and provider.
Yes.
Whereas Phantom cannot give her societally anything that she is supposed to want and need.
Yeah.
But
he would remove her from society. Yes,
but he fosters her passions and her talents and is, in a weird way, kind of her biggest cheerleader and fan. So, and we'll come back to this at the end, I think, when we go into our big debate over who we would choose. But I think this version, Phantom's kind of just a creep.
Mm-hmm.
And Raul's kind of just a sweet boy.
Yeah.
And I dislike it because I think there is something lost in the complexity of the storytelling.
I agree with all of that. Again, this was my first viewing of this. And so that shaped what I thought he was supposed to be. And I was so thrown for a loop when I saw the stage performance. I'll save the rest of my commentary on that for the question that we have at the end. But I think, you know, talking about, like, what is our biggest problem with it, it's funny, I've realized as I've gotten older that, like, the stories I like best are the ones that I say are the most thematically coherent, that pick a theme or an idea and center around that theme or idea, and maybe they look at it from several different angles, but there is one guiding central idea. And in this, I don't know that they had one beyond Andrew Lloyd Webber saying the Phantom is the hero and he needs to be sexy and desirable.
I hate how they did Phantom.
and so, like, when we were talking about the, you know, the when Christine gets pulled into the mirror, which I think overall is like a good looking
visually
scene.
It's good.
You know, and
in
we
fact
see...
one of my favorite shots from the film is right when she steps through the mirror and she briefly kind of looks back.
Mm-hmm.
And the lighting, the framing, everything is just really pretty.
Yeah. But then later when Meg shows up and she looks down that hallway and it's dark and creepy and we think, oh, so that wasn't the way it was. So that means that Christine was either, you know, intoxicated mm-hmm. or enchanted or something. And, but then... when she wakes up in the Phantom's lair, it's just, the next morning, it's just as beautiful. It's just as magical. And so, instead of being like, yes, this is a young woman being, you know, manipulated and lured.
Groomed, really.
Groomed,
yeah.
And coming to this terrible place. Instead, it's like, ooh, you can't explain it, so it's a mystery.
It's like, the Phantom is literally magic, and so he brings... the magic with him.
It should have decided we're going to make this like a, you know, I can't believe I'm about to say this. Les Mis decided that it was going to do a gritty tone.
Yep.
It didn't work at all. And I don't think
it
would
have... But it was consistent. I'll give it that.
It was consistent. I don't think Phantom works if you do gritty. Mm-hmm. It has to be over the top and corny mm-hmm. and campy. But this was the first musical that started trying to dip its toes into being, you know, ah, but what if it were real? Well, no one wants it to be real.
Right.
We want it to be a crazy over the top fantasy.
We came here for a ghost story.
Yeah.
Tell us a ghost story.
Make his face scary, please. You know, well, you know, it was almost like they were like, what would someone with a deformity actually look like? You couldn't see the skull through the skin and all
yeah,
these things, but
I don't care.
Yeah.
And even with that, there are people who have, like, more devastating deformities than that.
Oh, by far.
This guy has, like, a weird birthmark and a bald spot. That's it.
Do you know what he has?
What?
He has a Zuko scar.
He does! He has a sexy Zuko scar. That's stupid.
Yep.
Yeah, he doesn't look bad at all.
No.
The worst part of the transformation when his mask comes off is that his wig comes off and you realize he's a blonde.
He knew that look didn't work for him.
No! He needed the black hair back.
He knew it didn't work as a blonde. So I wish that, you know, I said thematic consistency. I wish it had tonal consistency.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, in this desire to try and make it more down to earth and yet also more over the top and flamboyant at the same time. And you know what's the epicenter of that is the masquerade scene. We want it to be over the top and flamboyant with what otherwise is really good choreography. I like all the dancing. I even like the voguing guy. But then we put them all in black and gold gowns.
Why? Like, who decided that this was like... Okay, two questions. Question one, who decided we were throwing a black and white party? And two, why did nobody give Christine the memo?
Mm-hmm.
She's the only person not wearing black and white.
Yep.
Or gold. Like it's,
and the Phantom.
And the Phantom. But I hate that they're all wearing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
If a few of them are wearing black, white, and gold, that's great. But there should be multiple colors. It should be...
Side note, in the musical, Meg has the best costume out of all of them.
Yeah, she does. Another thing, kind of honing in on that, like, gritty realness that they aim for. So, they signed up to do a musical. They signed up to do a very operatic musical. So tell me why they speak the lyrics. Like, they don't just speak and then transition into songs. They are saying the lyrics to the song, like their lines.
Yeah.
And it's
He's
like
little Lottie thought of everything and nothing. Instead of, you know, little
her
Lottie
father,
thought of everything.
Her father promised to bring her the angel of music. It's like, you know what's less realistic than you singing? You speaking in rhyme.
You know what really, the one that bothered me the most is the first time that the Phantom drops the backdrop And it's the first time that we've seen any hint of him. And in the musical, that's how we're introduced to the leitmotif.
The Phantom of the Opera.
And every time they say Phantom of the Opera, they're going to sing it like that. Phantom of the Opera. And then it matches again with Angel of Music.
Mm-hmm.
I can't sing. I apologize to everyone.
But you know, when you hear that, da 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 da, the Phantom is here.
Yeah.
And you don't have to see him. And you use that to build suspense. Because the combo of that and then the da 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 da, like, yep. For example, in the stage play, you don't see Phantom murder the guy.
Yep.
You just see the dead body drop down from the rafters,
yes,
on a noose.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do, though, they play the da 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 da, and so you're not going, oh, I wonder what happened to that guy. You're going, Phantom killed him. That's Phantom's theme. Phantom killed him. End of discussion. You know, like, you just... Use the source material that you have in front of you.
Yeah.
Like, musicals were crafted a specific way to convey information musically.
Mm-hmm.
So why not just sing the line?
Yeah. Okay, it's, I will say this. We...
And this is one time.
Listeners, y'all should have been there. Because they did this the whole time. And then suddenly at the end... I'm going to keep using the phrase in the stage musical, but sorry, they want us to compare it to the stage musical. In the stage musical, when Christine and Raoul are leaving, there's this moment where the Phantom absolutely loses it, and he just screams, go,
go now!
Go now and leave me! And it's actually kind of striking because he's not singing it. He's kind of been singing leading up to it.
And there clearly are notes that he could sing, but he refuses to sing in that moment, and it is... thematic.
Yes. And then in this one, instead of singing all the directions that in the musical, he's like, leave me, go now, don't wait. But in this one, Gerard says all that,
yeah,
right?
Leave me,
go now.
Go now, don't wait.
Don't let them find you. But then in the end, he goes,
yeah,
go now and leave me. And it's like, why are you singing that part, buddy? What? So it was the weirdest inverse and flip on its head. Yeah, that was the other one that just really weirded me out.
Yeah, that irks me. I just don't get it. I don't get that decision.
One other thing that you said that I found interesting, we both like the performance from the lady who plays Madame Giry.
Mm-hmm.
However, in the original production, it seems like she... you said, has lost control of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
She felt bad for this young boy once, and she helped him, and now she is seeing what he's become, but it's too late, there's nothing she can do.
And I always got the impression that in the original musical, she knows more than she's telling,
mm-hmm,
but she's not hiding the information out of any sort of loyalty to the Phantom. She's hiding the information out of fear for herself.
Yeah.
What will the Phantom do to her if she talks? Or what will everyone else do to her if they know that she befriended the Phantom, that she's the reason he's there?
Yes.
So there's all these personal stakes for why she keeps her mouth shut.
In this one, she watches as he does things. She watches him lock her in her room.
And she doesn't do anything. She's like, Christine's like a daughter to me. And I'm like, then you're a terrible mother.
Yeah.
Dude. Yeah. Gross.
So. Oh, I can't believe we haven't mentioned this yet. There's a bag of potato chips in the back of Raoul's carriage. If you don't know what I'm talking about, when Raoul is riding up to the opera house for the first time, standing in his chaise and four.
Just bag of Lays.
Just chilling in the back
seat. Just a blue bag of chips. And the worst thing is that there are two separate shots. They show him riding up. They cut to the opera, then they cut back to him, like, 2 minutes later. The chip bag is still there, which means either they did that all in one take and then split it, and that was still the best take they had. Two, they maybe didn't have even enough takes to go look at different options.
Mm-hmm.
Or, the worst case scenario is that whoever was in charge of continuity was like, well, we already screwed it up, I guess just put the chips back. Like...
I, I say this. I don't know that it was chips exactly, but there's a bag.
They
of
look like potato chips. It doesn't. Whatever it is, it is a plastic snack bag of some sort, like you would get at a gas station.
Yeah.
That's really upsetting. Oh, and you know what else? I'm gonna go here. I didn't. I was gonna hold my tongue, but you know what? I've decided I'm gonna say something. Emmy Rossum is so sweet and cute and pretty.
Yeah.
And her voice is nice.
It's nice.
It's nice.
She's a nice girl.
She has no emotion this entire movie.
I turned to you at one point and I said, she pre-recorded this, so why isn't she opening her mouth a little bit more when mm-hmm. she's singing? And I thought that would be the worst of it, but also, you pre-recorded this. Which means you have the freedom to emote so much more. And she does the, like, curious and enchanted look, but that's the only
The only thing she can do.
That's the look
Sierra
on her face.
Sierra Boggess, like, sobs on stage. The one that is, to me, the worst culprit is Twisted Every Way, What Answer Can I Give?
Yeah.
So, in the play and the movie, Christine reaches this point where she knows that she is going to have to risk herself, her life, her freedom to capture Phantom. Because they have reached the point of no return, which is the next song coming up, basically. They've reached this point where she realizes that either Phantom will take her and she will be his prisoner forever, or they're going to arrest Phantom. They've come to an impasse. There's no other way. So she recognizes, because Raoul has forced her to... At this point,
mm-hmm.
Raoul has concocted a plan to put her in Phantom's opera so that she can lure him out and they can arrest him.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, works so well.
It goes great, everybody.
It goes so great. His plan totally works. And, you know, in the musical in particular, the stage musical, he, like, straight up forces her and she doesn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So then she sings this part, Twisted Every Way, What Answer Can I Give? Am I to risk my life to win the chance to live? Mm-hmm. In this one, she looks mildly, like, constipated. And then in the stage, like, when a good Christine on stage does it, they're, like, openly weeping.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted her to be upset. She should be... She never looked scared.
Yeah.
Phantom should have scared her. I don't know. There are a lot more things that I don't like than I do.
Yeah.
Anything bad?
But Phantom looks sexy, though.
I don't even like how he looks sexy. I think it's goofy. I want his hat back.
It is goofy. I turned... to live at multiple points in this and went, is he hot or is he just wearing a white billowy shirt and high-waisted black pants? And I feel like that could be one of the chapters in my memoir. Is this person hot
or
are they just wearing high-waisted black pants and a poet shirt?
Which brings us to our final question, I think. Uh-huh. Who would you choose? Who would you leave with?
I completely agree with you in this version. If you don't pick Himbo Raoul, you are a fool.
You are. You're missing out on a golden opportunity.
However, story time here. The first time I saw this live, my mom took me to see it. I'm surprised at how often I keep talking about how my mom has influenced my tastes mm-hmm. on this, but my mom took me to see it, and it was a bonding experience for us. I was in high school. And we got to the intermission, and we were waiting in line for the bathroom, and I asked her this question, and she was like, oh, you even have to ask? And I went, right? And at the same time, I said Phantom, and she said Raoul, and we both pulled our heads back in surprise. And she went, he's a murderer. And I said, he's misunderstood. But then she tried to pull the, oh, but Amelia... Raoul is the Christ figure who's there to save her from the wayward temptation that's and the manipulation that's happening from the Phantom.
Sorry, Mrs. Pepper, but Christine is the Christ figure.
Yes, yes, we agree upon that. However,
Raoul just sucks.
However, what was interesting about it was that after the musical, when we left, so that Twisted Every Way scene had happened. And in this one, it was similar to the recording with Ramin Kamirlu and Sierra Burgess. And for the life of me, I can't think of the guy who played Raul's name. And it's such a shame because he's wonderful. And I've seen him in other things. He's fantastic. But afterwards, she said to me, you know what? He yelled at her. And he did when she runs away and says, I can't do this. He stands up and throws something on the ground and yells, don't you dare run away from this. And he gaslights her. And for the rest of it, and she was like, and he was also, you know, kind of just mocking and tormenting the Phantom. It didn't seem like he really cared about her.
By the way, Hadley Fraser is
Hadley Raul. Fraser, thank you. He's fantastic in that role. Mm-hmm. He is not the Raul that I would want to be with. That goes to Patrick Wilson. But I do think he's the best Raul in terms of the complexity that he
threads
brings.
The needle between Jackass and genuine
tender
boyfriend.
Lover. Yeah.
Really well.
And so in that one, you gotta go with the Phantom. He is passionate. There are no more passionate songs in musical theater for me than Music of the Night mm-hmm. and Past the Point of No Return. Both of them are, pardon the phrase, panty droppers in different ways. But regardless,
they really are.
He is leading her to pursue her passions in every sense of the word.
Yes.
And I'm here for it. And if it's played by Ramin Kamirlu, I am
I love that man so much.
For it.
I
just showed her pictures of Gleb, by the way, Anastasia fans.
Speaking, side note about Ramin.
This was a fun fact.
This made me upset. So when you, if you watch, if you're like, who is this guy that they keep referencing? And then you decide to watch the 25th. Or not the 25th, sorry.
Was it 30th?
No, it was the 25th. If you decide to watch the film version of Phantom, if you want to watch a really excellent version of Phantom, go watch the 25th anniversary. That is where he stars mm-hmm. as Phantom. And Sierra Boggess, who is the best Christine, hands down, fight me on it. They're both wonderful.
Her wishing you were somehow here again transcends me.
It's so good. What upset me is that as we're watching this movie, they show a little portrait of Christine Daae's deceased father.
And I stopped. I rewound the movie. I was like, wait, did you see that? Because I had never noticed this before. Mm-hmm. And I went, hold on. I need to stop this and Google something real quick. So I got on my phone and Googled something and tell them what I discovered.
So we rewind it and look at the picture again. And then she pauses it on the face and goes, do you know who that is? And I was like, no. What? It's Ramin.
Yep.
He is the portrait of Christine Daae's father. Mm-hmm. Here's why that upsets me. That means they intentionally put him in this movie and did not let him sing. They said, this man is going to be in the Phantom of the Opera, but we're going to make Gerard Butler be Phantom. they were aware of his existence enough that they could have cast him as Phantom and didn't.
Yep.
Oh, man. That's rough.
Yep.
But to give my answer is very similar to yours. In this version, I would choose Raul every time. In literally every other version, every other stage production, I would choose Phantom. And now some of you might be saying, but Liv, he killed somebody. To which I would respond, you are absolutely right. But you know what? He was never condescending to Christine.
The lines that our fictional men may not cross versus the ones that they
murder,
might.
Murder? A-okay. Being disrespectful to a lady? Never. Also, the guy who he murdered was a creep. He kind of had it coming.
Well, they established that in this movie. They go out of their way to make Joseph Bouquet a total creep. creep. He's a peeping Tom and,
yeah,
you know, gross. But they don't really do that
too, you know, much. We never saw him kill Joseph Bouquet in the musical. Maybe it was an accident.
Who knows? Okay, you said this and I have to agree with you. You said that, hands down, the actual best choice for any woman to walk away with from this musical is Pianji. The wife of Carlotta, or the husband of Carlotta,
get
sorry.
Get you a man like Pianji. Get you a man with a nice little, like, belly.
Dad bod.
Great dad. Even beyond dad bod. He's like... You know, a plus-size king.
He's a plus-size king. He wears fabulous costumes.
Fabulous clothes. Knows how to have a good time. And he just walks around and celebrates his girl all day.
Yep.
He's like, look at this beautiful painting of you, Carlotta. Mwah, beautiful.
Let's put it back in your room. I'm going to sit outside the opera house with you and wait to hear the reviews of Christine dying, because it's important to you. But I'm going to catch you when you faint when it's bad news.
Carlotta's like, until you stop of these things from happening, this thing does not happen, and leaves the opera house. And not only does Pianji follow her without a second thought, he stays behind just to give one last dig at the new owners. Yep. He's like, amateurs, and then walks out. Get you a man like Pianji.
It's true.
That's absolutely the correct choice.
When she
here.
Comes and is crying over his body because the Phantom has murdered him for no good reason,
yeah,
at the end of this, it's legitimately sad.
I guess he does murder Pianji. Yeah, that's kind of unforgivable.
Yeah.
But, okay, hear me out, though. You want to know, okay, there are two moments that melt me for Ramin's Phantom every time. The Christine, I love you, and the tears. And then the part when, after she leaves, right before he sings Christine, I Love You, and he's singing, he's listening to the music box he's had since he was little, and it's the monkey that claps the cymbals, and he's singing Masquerade, and he claps with the monkey, and he's crying. Ah!
Yep.
I would choose him every time. Yep. Every time. When she kisses him in this version,
He's expecting it. He's like, yeah.
I'm hot. And in the good version, the 25th anniversary, Ramin's Phantom literally has like hands up and is like stepping back. Like,
they're trembling.
He's like, wait, she's kissing me. She chose me. And then of course he realizes why she did it, and he's like, wow, I'm the jerk. And he.
Wait a minute. I'm the maniac. Yeah, it's beautiful and wonderful.
Yeah. Long story short,
out of 1,000 candles, what do you give this movie? Because that's how many candles were in his friggin' room.
he's like, help me make the musical. Okay.
And
there's
sorry.
Like sunlight shining in through the sewer.
I'm sorry.
Like, where is that coming
that
from?
That is my one other gripe, is the lighting in this movie. That in the moments where they're singing about it being darkness, it's always filled with light. And then in the moments where it's supposed to be bright and happy and cheery, it's never well lit.
And it's like, I feel like there was an intentional choice to do that, but they just like missed the mark. Like they're trying to say something here, but it doesn't feel like they're saying anything.
Sometimes it's muted for no good reason. You know, when I talked about them walking around reading the notes, the two owners are walking around this elevated hallway, and it's kind of lit, kind of not, and there's no good reason for it. So yeah, the lighting for a musical with a bunch of light motifs, they did not do the lighting well.
Yeah.
That wasn't a pun, really, even.
I mean, they're two different lights, but
still.
What light motif is like L-I-E-T?
I thought it was L-E-I-T.
L-E-I-T. Yeah. But yeah, if I'm honest, I would give, objectively, I would give this movie 100 out of 1,000 candles.
You personally, though, let's be real.
Because of the fact that I never would have probably gone to see the actual Phantom of the Opera if I had not seen this, and it has basically spawned a lifelong obsession with Phantom. Mm-hmm. And as much as I dislike the choices they made with Phantom, Gerard Butler's Phantom still was, like, my OG Phantom crush.
Oh, yeah. He still floats my boat, to be perfectly honest.
I'm gonna give it 300 candles out of 1,000 candles.
I was going to give it 350 candles out of 1,000.
Okay, we're close.
He still does it for me. When he swings his cape, I don't know, man.
I just miss the hat. I want the hat back.
See, I hate that hat.
I love
it works
hat.
When he's supposed to look creepy. But, like, in this, when he's not supposed to look as creepy, he's just, yeah, you can tell how this movie shaped my lifelong obsession with dark, broody bad boys in gloves.
Yes. It yeah. definitely did that.
Yeah.
So, cheers to Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Mm-hmm.
And to...
Here's to mentally unstable men with excellent handwear.
But only in fiction.
But only in fiction.
If you're mentally unstable and have good handwear in real life, congratulations on your good handwear. Go get therapy.
Yes.
But here's to the fictional sad boys with anger management issues who have stolen my heart again and again and again.
They have learned to be lonely.
They have.
Just like that,
in fan fiction.
Just like that 120-year-old Phantom who's running around leaving 5,000 franc rings tied up with roses at grave sites.
Except for, if depending on how you take it, I mean, Andrew Lloyd Webber was like, I don't like that Phantom never got the girl. So he literally, like, wrote an entire sequel just so
we don't talk about it.
You know, we keep saying that, and yet I'm kind of dying to.
Not now.
It's so bad.
Next musical month, I would let you do it, but...
They made Meg the villain. Madame Giry's still there, but has, like, no agency. Raoul's an alcoholic now. That kind of checks.
I'm going to go ahead and say it. Even in the stage musical... Even Raoul stage musical, that doesn't check. He, even though Andrew Lloyd Webber did not want it, he is supposed to be a complex character choice.
Yes.
He is supposed to still be a safe option. Mm-hmm. Alcoholism is many things. It is not safe.
No.
So, no. Okay. I do not stand that he became a raging alcoholic.
Logically, you're right. The part of me who wants Christine to end up with the Phantom, damn it. I'm going to say it. I'm going to get it off my chest. Love Never Dies is objectively the worst musical I've ever seen. I kind of love it. There, I said it.
Mm-hmm.
It's my garbage. I'm the trash man.
It will be fitting for the next musical month.
Okay. I don't even know if there's a version of it that we can watch.
There was on Prime. We got one.
Hell yeah. I'm gonna make you watch it. Seen it?
No.
Not
all the way through.
It's so bad.
I tried. I couldn't. Anyway. All
right. Well,
we haven't decided what we're doing after this.
No, we haven't decided what we're doing after this. Should we just take a little break and just do,
let's just watch some movies.
We're just gonna watch some movies. So no theme for the next month, just random movies that we like that are probably not very good.
Whee!
Woohoo! So join us next week for whatever we choose. And,
thank you for sticking through musical month.
Yeah, until then, go out and, you know, help us make the music of the night or whatever. And,
yeah, we're wishing you were somehow here again.
Yeah. All right. Bye. Thanks for hopping in the trash can with us.
Give this week's movie a watch and tell us what you think.
And let us know what movies you think are trashy treasure.
Maybe we'll give it a watch.
Follow us on Twitter at LivinLizzie to tell us your thoughts.
And remember, no matter how trashy you feel, You are deeply treasured.
Bye.